The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, when I was in high school, I had to study for the HSC. Now, the HSC, this was the exams and all exams. But how cruel to make us young people study. Exams should be for uni students, not us high school students. When I went to uni, I had to study for the final year med exams. Now, they were the exams to end all exams. But how cruel to make us uni students study. Exams should be for old people, not us uni students. Then when I was doing my PhD, I had to study for my postgrad exams. Now, they were the exams to end all exams. But how cruel to make us old people study. Exams should be for young people, not us old people with leaky brains. Exams, we all did them, we all survived them, but why? Because we have a simple formula in life. Study hard, get good marks in the HSC, get good marks in the HSC, get into uni, get a job, and then we will be successful. Well, welcome to the first legal for the year, and I'm kicking off the year with a four-week series called Four Keys to Happiness. Key number one is success. Number two next week is love. Then number three is freedom. And finally, number four is being true to yourself. And the purpose is to look at each one of these keys of happiness and see what the Bible might say about them. And this will come in the form of a 20-minute talk, which I'm giving now. And afterwards, we'll have some time for question and answer. So today is week number one, and our first key to happiness is success. And we could define success as finally getting what we're looking for. Maybe we're looking for wealth, for some of us it might be fame, for some of us it might be status, social standing, or maybe even a well-adjusted family. And when we get what we're looking for, we have found success. Now, we've just heard a story in the Bible where Jesus tells a story about a man who does find success. He plants some crop, becomes a bumper crop, so much crop he doesn't know what to do with it. So he says, I know what I'll do. I'll tear down the old smaller barns, build some bigger ones, and now I can eat, drink, and be happy. He's found the key to happiness. This man is successful. His business has succeeded. Boom. Now he can retire. He's successful and he can be happy. But then in the story, God calls a man a fool. And this is the part of the story I just don't get. Why does God call this man a fool? He's done what any Asian parent tells their Asian to do. Work hard, save it up, and you'll have enough to live on. He's done what Tony Abbott is telling us to do. Store away a bit in super and then retire. So he's done what any Asian or Aussie is doing. He's doing what you and I would do. So why does God call this man a fool? So what can we say about success? Well, there are three parts to my talk. First part, we'll look at, well, what is success? In the middle part of my talk, we'll look at the problems with success. And the final part of the talk, well, what does the Bible say about success? So let's begin with the first part of the talk. Well, what is success? And here I've got two things to say. What is success? Number one, success is based on a meritocracy. Number one, success is based on a meritocracy. A few years ago, I ran in the Sydney Half Marathon. And the Sydney Half Marathon is a two-lap race through Sydney. And I remember I was just about to finish my first lap when I noticed coming up behind me was a motorbike escort telling all of us to get out of the way because the leader, the winner of the race, was coming through about to finish his second lap. He was running twice as fast as the rest of us were. And the guy next to me said, it's easy for him. He's only going to run for half the time we do. But then he went on to win, and they gave him a medal because he earned a medal. They didn't give me a medal because I didn't earn any medal. And that's what they call a meritocracy. In a meritocracy, we have to merit. We have to earn our medals. In a meritocracy, we have to earn our degrees. We have to earn our wages. We have to earn our awards. And they're the medals we chase. So they're not given to us. We have to earn them by being harder working, more disciplined, and smarter than the person next to us. And these medals let us advance in society. Our society is achievement-based. It's based on a meritocracy. And if we earn these things, then we become successful. I would be a successful business person if my business turns a profit. I'm a successful scientist if my research paper gets published. I'm a successful parent if my children grow up to be independent and of good character. So that's number one. What is success? Number one, it's based on a meritocracy. Number two, what is success? Number two, success promises us a good life. Number two, success promises us a good life. I have three boys, Toby, Cooper and Jonty, aged 7, 5 and 3. What we did was for the first one, we went through the top 10 dog names. So we found Toby. Second one, we thought we'd go through the top 10 beer names. So that's how we got Cooper. And the third one, we go through top 10 cricketer names. And that's how we got Jonty. Anyway, I remember when we were in Melbourne for a holiday and Toby was just a baby of about 1 year old. And we had breakfast every day in a place like this. And Toby decided he would make friends with an older man from another table. And the two, every day for a week, would make faces at each other and just trying to make each other laugh. And at the end of the week, they had quite a rapport going. And when it was time to go, the older man got up from his table, came all the way to our table, and he asked me, "What's your son's name?" And I said, "Toby." And he leant over and he put his hand on Toby's shoulder and said, "Toby, have a good life." And with that, he walked away. And I thought, that was such a nice thing to do. He sort of had blessed my son and wished upon him a good life. And that's what we all parents want for our children, a good life. We want our children to grow up to have a house. We don't want them to be homeless. We want them to have a job. We don't want them to be unemployed. We want them to have a safe, reliable car, not an old, unsafe car that always breaks down. We want a good life for them. And success promises this good life for our children. If we just study hard, work hard, we will have the house, we'll have the job, we'll have the car, we and our children will have a good life. And it's also good for us to chase success. It gives us a reason to live. It gets us out of bed each day and it promises us the good life. Not just us, not just our children, but society. See, if I'm a successful scientist and I find a new antibiotic, society flourishes, it benefits. If I'm a musician and I'm successful and my music gets out there, society flourishes, it benefits. And if I'm a successful parent and I raise a new generation of well-adjusted people of good character, society flourishes, it benefits. So that's number two, success promises us the good life. And not just a good life for us, but our children and all of society. So that's the first part of the talk. What is success? One, it's a meritocracy. Two, it promises us a good life, a better life for us and society. Well, what might be some problems with success? And this is the middle part of my talk. And here I've got three things to say. What might be some problems with success? Three things. Number one, it leads to fear and insecurity. Chasing success, number one, leads to fear and insecurity. When I was studying medicine, they taught me that it was a numbers game. A numbers game. Because 90% of us in the room will pass, but 10% of us in the room will fail. And I thought that was great news, because that meant in a room full of 100 med students, all I had to do was find 10 students dumber than me, and I knew I'd pass the exam. And so I remember in second year, physiology, in the exam, I looked around and I thought, okay, yep, you're dumber than me. You're dumber than me, you're dumber than me. And I found my 10 people, I thought, I'm through, I passed this exam. But when the results came out, I had failed. It turned out I was one of those 10 dumber students. And that's the problem with a numbers game. We never know which side of the line we're on. For everyone who passes, there are those who have to fail. For everyone who is successful, there will have to be some who are not successful. There is a line. And we never know when we've done enough to be on this side of the line. How much do we have to do before we know we pass the exam? How much do we have to work before we know we're secure? How much do we have to put away in super until we know we have enough to retire on? How much do we have to do? And this is why we parents push and push and push our kids. Because school is not enough now. We have to give them extra tutoring. And then how much tutoring is enough? Do we give them 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? How much is enough? And then do we tutor them in science? Well, we better do maths as well. Well, we better do English. How much is enough? And it's the same with the man in the story. He says to himself, hey, I've got plenty. I can now store up, eat, drink, and be merry. But how does he know if he's got enough stored up to be eating, drinking, and being merry? What if he lives 10 more years than he thought he would? What if a GFC comes and just wipes away everything? And what if his children waste away his wealth? How much is enough? So that's the first problem with success. It actually leads us to fear and insecurity in trying to chase after it, because we never know if we've done enough. Number two, the problem with success. Number two, it might not give us the acceptance we're looking for. It might not give us the acceptance we're looking for. Now, before Tony Abbott became Prime Minister of Australia, he was just another normal Aussie bloke. He went to Sydney Uni, and I remember I once played against him in a rugby game. I was playing for Sydney Uni Fits, and then by then he was playing for Manly Fits. We packed a scrum against each other. I once surfed the same break as Tony Abbott in a Manly beach, but since then, I've stayed a nobody. But Tony Abbott has gone up and up and up in politics, and he is now Prime Minister of Australia, the highest success you can get in politics. But many people don't like Tony Abbott. I was just in Newtown, I saw a poster of Tony Abbott, which is very cruel. It said some nasty things about Tony Abbott. And that's the irony of success. When we find success, it actually doesn't give us the respect it should give us. And this is the irony of our society. Supposedly in our society, success is what will get us ahead. But in our society, success is resented. In our society, people will resent us and make fun of us for our success. The doctor with the Mercedes will get her car scratched because someone will resent her for her success. The business person with the waterfront mansion is successful, but his children will hate him. Rafael Nadal is successful. Last year, he was ranked number one in the world, but they booed him at the Australian Open final. So success is supposed to give us the recognition we deserve, the appreciation we need, the acceptance we long for, but instead it seems to do the opposite. People whisper behind our backs. People resent our success, and they cheer when we fail. So we hope that success gives us respect, but it's a grudging respect. We hope that it'll mean now I'm somebody, but it'll be somebody that no one likes. And it should give us acceptance, but it's only a shallow acceptance to your face, and it only lasts while the success lasts. So that's the second problem with success. It actually might not give us the acceptance it should give us. And number three, the final problem with success is it might not give us the happiness either. Number three, it might not give us the happiness we're looking for either. Now, I'm a crossword nerd, and what that means is every day I try to get a copy of the Sydney Morning Herald crossword, and I carry it around with me in my pocket, and any spare moment I'm trying to fill out the crossword. It gives me something to do all day. But here's the funny thing, when I finish the crossword, it's sort of a bittersweet moment, because now what am I going to do for the rest of the day? I don't have a crossword to do. And success is a bit like that. Success is climbing a mountain, great while you're climbing, but what do you do when you get to the top? What do you do when suddenly you realise I'm the only one up here and there's no one else here with me? Friedrich Nietzsche called success, called this feeling, the melancholy of all things accomplished. The melancholy of all things accomplished. When we find success, what we'll find instead is melancholy. In 1991, Australia won the Rugby World Cup. And Nick Farr-Jones was the captain of Australia. And that is the highest sporting success you can get. Captaining your country to a World Cup win. And Farr-Jones was interviewed many years later by the BBC. And they asked him, what was that feeling when you finally held the trophy up in front of the world and you lifted it up? And Farr-Jones replied, there was a sense of melancholy. After working your butt off and realising that this has been the focus of your life and it doesn't get any better than that, there's a sense of, well, is that all? And is this as good as it gets? And it leaves you in a vacuum. And we too will feel that same vacuum that same melancholy when we finally finish our post-grad exams, when we finally get the partnership in the company, and our kids are finally raised and they leave us in the empty home. Melancholy, nothing left to climb, no further worlds to conquer. So that's the third problem with success. So we've looked at what is success, we've looked at what some problems might be. Let's now come to the final part of the talk and what the Bible might have to say about success. And here I've got two things to say, and they're two clues from the story, two clues. Clue number one, success is not a meritocracy. Clue number one from the story, success is not a meritocracy. And the clue comes in verse 16, and it's subtle when Jesus says, the ground produced for the man a good crop. The ground produced, meaning nudge, nudge, wink, wink, God gave this man his good crop. God gave the man his success. So yes, the man worked hard. He had to plant the seeds. He had to water the seeds. He had to plow the ground. But he couldn't go to the ground and go, grow and make the plants come up. No, God made the crops grow. God gave this man the success. And this means you and I can work as hard as we want for our success. But in the end, there are many factors out of our control. Do we have parents who can support us financially and emotionally? Will we be in good health on the day of our exams? What if the wrong questions come up in the exam? What if our country has a military coup and our savings are wiped out? What if floods come and destroy my business? What if my wife's health fails and now I have to look after her and not my business? And what if my child is born with a learning disability? So our success is actually based much less on what we can do, and it's much more based on what God does or doesn't do for us. In other words, borrowing the words from a lecture from my Bible college, success is a gift, not gain. Success is a gift from God that we enjoy rather than something we gain by our own hands. So yes, we still have to work hard. The man in the story had to work hard. But it really depends on whether God decides to bless our work or not, and to bless it with what we might call success. It's a gift from God rather than gain. And this changes our attitude to success. So if we are what we think successful, we should be humble and thankful to God for his gift. If we don't find our version of success, we should say, okay, that's okay. Just trust God that he must know what's best. There's another reason why he hasn't granted me what I'm looking for. In the end, we just have to trust God that he knows what's best. Maybe we're not going to get the marks we wanted in the post-grad exam. Maybe we're not going to get the job we wanted. Maybe we won't get the trophy family to show off. But that's okay. That's God's will. That's God's plan. And he knows what's best. So we rethink our definition of success. Success is now whatever God chooses to give us. It's a gift from God rather than what we gain. And this frees us from the fear and insecurity of trying to be successful in our own eyes and the eyes of other people. So that's number one. Success is not a meritocracy. It's a gift rather than something we gain. Number two, clue number two, success is to be right with God. To be successful is to be right with God. And the second clue comes in verse 21, and this is the punchline, the explanation from Jesus. This is how it will be for anyone who stores up for themselves, but they're not rich towards God. In other words, true success, God's version of success, is to be rich towards God. And I think being rich towards God is Jesus' metaphor for having a rich, flourishing relationship with God. In the same way we're supposed to have a rich, flourishing relationship with our earthly father, our dad, we're also meant to have a rich, flourishing relationship with our Heavenly Father, God. A few years ago, I was at a wedding, and I happened to sit next to a guy I used to know from high school, many years ago in high school. And he said to me, you know, I was a real rat bag in high school, and I'm sorry for that. Because during high school, I was going through a real rough time. My dad was a surgeon, filthy rich, but my dad and my mum were going through a rough patch, and actually they were divorcing while I was in high school. My dad never spent any time with me. My dad thought he could make me happy by giving me lots of money. So he'll give me obscene amounts of money for pocket money. $20, $50, $100 a day. And then this guy said to me, but my dad didn't get it. I didn't want his riches. I wanted him to be rich towards me. It's the same with us. We think our version of success is to be rich, and that will be successful. But really, God is saying, I don't want your riches. I just want you to be rich towards me. And that's how we will find happiness. So how do we become rich towards God? How do we find this rich, flourishing relationship? Well, again, it's a gift, not gain. It's not something we gain by working hard and trying to earn God's favor and try to gain his attention. It's a gift. God gives us his son, Jesus. God gives us his spirit that lives in us. And God gives us the status as being children of God. It's a gift, not something we gain. Well, we've looked at what is success. We've looked at some problems with our usual version of success. And finally, we've had a redefinition of success according to the story in the Bible. It's a gift that we get from God, success. And then true success is to be rich towards God. So what's that, where does that leave you and me? Well, God actually wants us to be successful. It's just that his version of success might be different from our version of success. And at the end of the day, there's only one version that will count. In the story, God says to the man, "You fool, tonight your life will be taken from you." Then who's going to get all the riches you've accumulated for yourself? And there will be a day too where we will die. One day the x-rays will finally have a spot. The blood test will come back positive. And the doctor may have to use that word cancer on us. There will be a day where we all die. That's the part of life we just can't control. But there's one part of life we can control, and that is this. Were we rich towards God? Now, I have a doctor friend who works in a small country town. In such a small town, he's got to know everyone as both doctor and friend. And before any operation, he says to them, "Listen, as your doctor, I have to tell you this. There are risks, and there's always a small risk you would die in the procedure. There are risks. And now as your friend, I have to tell you, before the operation, you need to get yourself right with your family, and you need to get yourself right with God. Because that's what it means to be successful, to be in a rich, flourishing relationship. And at the end of the day, there will be a day we stand before God. There's one version of success that will count. It's not how rich we were in other people's eyes, but whether we were rich towards God.
Thank you very much, Sam. And, if people have any questions, I'm glad to collect your sheets. Thank you, Adrian.
Oh, okay, sorry. All right, wow. Okay, so two really good questions. Question number one, money is a gift. So if money is a gift from God, how much to keep and how much to support those in need? So if money is a gift, how much to keep, how much to support those in need? That's a really good question. Like, for 5 years, I was studying in Chicago doing my PhD, and I was being supported during that time because I wasn't allowed to work. And one of our major supporters were my own parents. They were supporting me while I was there. And my wife used to feel really guilty about this. She goes, like, if we went out and ate steak, she says, "This is your parents' money. Do you think we should be having steak or not? Like, maybe we should just go with the baked beans or the cornflakes." And I say, I think my parents would be thrilled to know we're eating steak because of what they've given us. And so money's, if it's a gift from God, we do have this challenge. On the one hand, God wants us to enjoy his gifts. And I'm sure in the story, God gave the man his crops so he actually could enjoy the crops. One of my favourite psalms is Psalm 104, where God seems to say there's much of his creation which he actually wants us to enjoy. And he says he gave us bread to sustain our hearts, not just grass to eat. He gave us oil to make our faces shine, so cosmetics, product in your hair, just so you feel a little bit better about yourself, have a bit of swagger when you walk around. And wine to gladden the hearts of man. So not just water to hydrate, but wine that's just going to give you a bit extra. So there's something about our creation that God actually wants us to enjoy. So I think we live in this tension that, yes, money's a gift from God, and he wants us to enjoy it. But on the other hand, as the question points out, it's a gift. It's a gift. We don't own it. So we're stewards of God's gift. And so somehow part of receiving things is you actually end up being more generous, because you realise, hey, I didn't earn this, I didn't merit this medal. There are factors out of my control that God has blessed me with by making these factors work. And so I have been blessed in the way other people haven't been blessed. I think God actually wants to bless those people through me. So I'll be a blessing to others because God has been a blessing to me. So we live that tension. It's a gift and joy, but a gift to be generous with. Maybe if I could help in another way. A lot of things in deciding what's the right or wrong thing to do, as you know, in ethics, we can either look at the consequences, the result. We can look at the action itself, and that's where you make principles, deontological ethics. Or you can look at character, virtue ethics. And the example that was given to me, Peter and I go shooting. Not that I'm condoning shooting, I don't own a gun, but let's say we find ourselves in a context where we have to shoot. We're in the Hunger Games, we've got to shoot a bird to stay alive, so we're in that sort of context. And I go think, okay, this is my chance to kill Peter. He's my new boss, but I want to be where he is, so no one's looking, and I shoot Peter. So the result is a dead Peter. Action is I shot a gun. My motive was I'm going to shoot Peter. And so in a court of law, murder. Let's say I want to shoot Peter, I want to kill him, but I'm a bad shot. I've never shot a gun before. My parents never let me own a rifle, way too dangerous. They won't let me have a trampoline and a skateboard, so they're not going to let me have a gun. And so I miss. I only wing him, he's bleeding. And so we have the result, a wounded Peter. Action, I shot a gun. Motive, I was trying to kill him. Court of law, attempted murder. Okay, let's say I'm trying to shoot the bird. Such a bad shot. I shoot Peter by mistake, kill him. Okay, result, dead Peter. Action, shot a gun. Motive was to shoot the bird. Court of law, manslaughter. So it's this that's so much more important than action or result. And it's the same with money. So money's a gift from God. I think what God is really, really looking at is our character, our motive. What are we, not so much what are we doing, not so much what the results are, but what is our motive? And as you know, in the DISC personality grid that often they make us take, if you're a D person, a person likes to take control, money represents power. If you're an I person, an imaginative, inspirational person, money represents freedom. If you're an S person or a C person where you like stability and quality control, money represents security and stability. So it's what money represents that actually starts becoming the problem. So God might give us a lot, might give us little, but you know, it's so much more our motive. And I think the motive is, This is from God. That's why we thank God before we eat. Not because it's legalistic. It's just nice to remind ourselves, okay, yeah, I work hard. Yeah. I earn a lot of money. But in the end, really, this food came to me from God. And it keeps us humble. I'm enjoying this food, this steak, but I should also be generous because other people have been blessed in the same way. So question number one, I've taken too long, haven't I?
Okay, you've got about 2 minutes.
2 minutes, okay. Number two. Does our attitude to God have any relevance to whether God gifts us with worldly success? Does our attitude to God have any relevance to whether God gifts us with worldly success? The verse I like here is that verse where God says, Jesus says, God sends rain on everyone. He sends rain. So whether you believe him or you don't believe him, whether you love him, whether you hate him, whether you worship him, whether you don't worship him, he's going to give you rain. He's going to bless your life. He's going to make things flourish for you. And so this way, theologians call this general creation blessing. Everyone gets to enjoy it. And so there's food, there's sex, there's romance, there's marriage. God gives blessings to everyone and worldly riches. And again, it's then the problem then is you don't know God, you don't get to enjoy his gifts in a context of worship with God. It's like a steak by yourself is actually quite miserable. It's all right every now and then, but every night you eat a steak by yourself, it's not fun. That's why you want to eat the steak with someone. You invite someone with you for dinner. If you want to go on holidays, you invite someone to come with you. It's actually awful to eat by yourself. And riches by themselves can actually be quite hollow. It's meant to be enjoyed in a worshipping relationship with the giver who gave you the gift. All right, finally, you did not mention contentment as an element in real success. Yes, the 10th commandment, don't covet what is others, is not this an important part of lasting success. So you did not mention contentment as an element in real success. The 10th commandment, don't covet what is others, is not this an important part of lasting success. Yes, I totally agree. And so in the question and answer time, I mentioned that character thing, and I think that comes down to this. When God gives us these things, we're meant to enjoy them with thankfulness, contentment, and also to be generous to others because of what he's given us.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.